Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Sam, a sound scientist, came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
It's October 27th, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association. I'm your host, Jess Constantine. Folks, this month I am podcasting from Washington, D.C., so if I sound a little bit different to you, it could be because I'm in a different location, but it's probably more to do with the fact that I am indeed wearing nothing on my feet. And I'm barefoot because that's the topic of this month's show. So we're talking about the barefoot revolution. You might have heard about the debate between running barefoot versus running with shoes on, or these shoes called the Nike Freeze or the Vibram Five Fingers. So our two guests are each biology professors, one from Harvard and one from Liberty University. And we're going to talk to them about their take on this idea of running, living, walking barefoot. Now, the reason why this topic fits in with humanism is because, just like as humanists, we believe in having this one environment, this one habitat, this one human habitat, and choosing to research alternative ways of living that will be more sustainable with this environment, we also believe that we only have this one life, this one body, and this one vessel. So we should also be researching and learning about the best ways to live the most healthy way, the most healthy life that we can. So we're going to hear from two professors, Dr. Daniel Howe, who also wrote the Barefoot book. He's going to talk a little bit about his book and a little bit about how sneakers might in fact be harming our feet and harming our body and changing the mechanics of how we walk. But first, we're going to hear from Dr. Daniel Lieberman, who is a professor in the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology at Harvard University. Dr. Lieberman was also educated at Harvard as well as Cambridge University, and his current research combines experimental biology and paleontology to ask why and how the human body looks and functions the way it does. So Dr. Lieberman conducts some of his research in his skeletal biology lab, and he's investigating the biomechanics of endurance running, comparing habitually barefoot runners with runners who normally run in modern running shoes with built-up heels, stiff soles, and arch support. So let's talk to Dr. Lieberman about his research and how it relates to humanism. I spoke with Dr. Lieberman earlier this month on the phone. Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour. You are a professor at the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology for Harvard. Can you talk a little bit about your work that you do there?
I'm interested in how and why the human body is the way it is. And I'm sort of a part paleontologist and part experimental biologist. And we study everything from heads to toes, from chewing to running, throwing. We're interested in how our bodies work and what evolution, how evolution has affected that and why that matters to the lives that we live today.
And the reason why I'm familiar with your work is because you've done some research on barefoot running. So I was wondering if you could make the connection for our listeners between barefoot running and your work with human evolution at Harvard.
I've long been interested in running in general because I believe that humans evolved to become endurance runners. A colleague of mine, Dennis Bramble, and I published a paper a few years ago in the journal Nature in 2004. It was sort of a major attempt to promote the endurance running hypothesis. We believe that that humans underwent a transition around 2 million years ago when we became carnivores to become long-distance runners. So we're not very good at sprinting, but we're incredibly good at long-distance running. We're good at thermoregulation. We're good at energy exchange. We're good at stabilization. And a lot of the features that we see that make us good at running, we think we can see in the fossil record maybe about 2 million years ago, and it helped our ancestors get meat. So our ancestors are killing pretty big, large, impressive creatures like kudus and wildebeest and things like that. One of the interesting questions is, how did they do that? Because projectile technology wasn't invented until incredibly recently. So the bow and arrow was less than 100,000 years old. And in fact, even putting a stone point on the end of a spear point, is actually less than 300,000 years old. So for most of human evolutionary history, the way in which people were able to hunt was, you know, with no weapon, you know, greater, you know, more lethal than a stick or a club, you know, a sharpened wooden stick. And, you know, if you were to take a sharpened wooden stick and try to kill an animal with it, you know, good luck. You would bounce off. You'd have to get very close to the animal, in which case you could get, you know, kicked and or gored by the horns. You'd be much better off being a vegetarian, right? So the question is, how did they hunt? And we think they did it through this method called persistence hunting, which is still used, and which takes advantage of two amazing human physiological capabilities. The first is that humans can run long distances, so we can do marathons and things like that. Even people like me, you know, average middle-aged, you know, professors, can run at speeds that make quadrupeds have to gallop. We actually have a very high endurance speed compared to the trot-gallop transition speed of most quadrupeds. And the reason that matters is that when you make a quadruped gallop, it can't pant, and that's how quadrupeds cool down. They cool down by short, shallow breath, between long breaths. But as soon as a quadruped starts galloping, it can no longer pant, and that's because its guts are acting like a giant piston engine slamming into its diaphragm and preventing it from breathing other than once per stride. This is work that was done by my colleague Dennis Bramble and others. Whereas we cool down by sweating, right? We've turned our basically entire bodies into sort of tongues, right? So when you run at a speed that makes an animal gallop, you will cause it to go into hyperthermia, and that's exactly what people do. They go on a hot day, they'll pick an animal. In fact, they'll pick the biggest animal they can because big animals get hotter faster, and they'll chase an animal at a gallop. Of course, it'll run away much faster than a human can because it can sprint. It'll hide in the bushes and try to cool down. But if you can track that animal and chase it again, you keep doing that, and you keep chasing it before it's restored its core body temperature, it'll eventually go up and up and up and up, and it'll finally go into heat stroke. And you can then kill it without having to risk anything other than you know, the time spent in a run. So it takes 10 to 20 kilometers to do that, which sounds like a lot of time and effort, but just think about how much meat and effort you get for running an animal that size into the ground. So we think that persistence hunting might have been an important method, not necessarily the only method, but an important method that humans used for hunting for millions of years before we invented things like the bow and arrow. And we don't need to do it anymore because we have all kinds of technologies like supermarkets and domesticated animals and bows and arrows and guns and things like that, but it was very important. In fact, if you think about it the other way, which is, you know, we have all these capabilities that make us so good at endurance running, and these are capabilities that are irrelevant to walking, many of them.
Right.
You know, what else could explain that?
Sure.
But the thing is that if humans evolved to run, they've obviously been running most of that time without shoes. And I sort of started thinking about, well, what is it about shoes that people like so much, but also... are there some advantages or disadvantages to shoes? So we started bringing in barefoot runners into the lab about 5 or 6 years ago just to kind of see how they run and to see if there are any differences. Because before then, all the data that had been published on barefoot running was done on just, you take a typical college student, ask them to take his or her shoes off, and you know, that's not real barefoot running. That's just a normally shod runner whose shoes have been taken off. So,
right.
And what we discovered was that that barefoot runners, habitually barefoot runners, or people who wear minimal footwear, so you don't have to be barefoot, by the way, but the point is that people who don't wear high-heeled, elevated, cushioned running shoes tend not to land on their heel. They tend to land more towards the ball of the foot, and they land in a much more compliant way that, very interestingly, does not generate a collisional force with the ground. So if you land on, if you were to take your shoes off and run down the street, and you land on your heels, you have this rapid exchange of momentum. It's a collision between your body and the ground. And if there's no shoe on, the magnitude of that collision can be about 2 to 3 times your body weight. And the rate at which it rises, the rapidity of that collision, can be about 400 or even 500 body weights a second. So it's like somebody taking a sledgehammer and hitting you on the ground on the heel with a hammer, which is why either you don't land on your heel when you're barefoot, or if you want to land on your heel, you have to wear a shoe.
Right.
But the shoe does is it makes it comfortable and easy. In fact, it sort of promotes heel striking, right? But that collision is still there. You just don't feel it. The shoe doesn't get rid of the energy. It just slows it down quite a bit, so it's comfortable, but it's still there, right? Mm-hmm. And we think that a more minimal shoe or even a barefoot run may be a healthier way to run because it's collision-free, and that nobody really ran that way or ran that way very rarely, I should say, until the modern running shoe was invented. And that one of the reasons so many people today get injured. So running injury rates are really unacceptably high. By most estimates, at least 30% of runners get repetitive stress injuries every year. It's a bit like unemployment statistics, too, because those are the people who complain about it, right? And a lot of people just stop running, or they're afraid to run, or they give up running because they've had injuries. So we're interested in ways to try to figure out how we can use sort of more natural ways of running to help people avoid injury and to live healthier lives and not get hurt, because we think it's a public health issue. I think it's a public health issue because running is the most basic essential form of aerobic exercise. When people can't run, that's a problem.
Are you a barefoot runner yourself?
I run both barefoot as well as in minimal shoes. And I think one of the things that I find interesting is how people like to define themselves, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, who wears just one pair of shoes all the time when they go out into the world, right? You know, sometimes
sure.
You wear sandals, sometimes you wear, you know, who knows what you wear. But same with running footwear. I think people can wear more than one thing, and I certainly do. So, and if you look at videos of a lot of the old great runners, you know, most of them were 4-foot strikers, right? They were not landing on their heels. They were wearing very minimal shoes. I mean, until the mid-70s, shoes were basically, you know, running flats. They had just a little bit of, you know, rubber underneath the foot, or, you know, they're like a moccasin or a sandal, really, which is what a lot of people still run in today. The Tarahumara, for example, wear sandals. A lot of Native Americans wear moccasins. So we don't know when the shoe was invented. It's impossible to figure that out. But the point is that when the shoe was invented, those were very minimal shoes. There was no motion control and no cushioning and, you know, none of that stuff that we now think is normal.
Right. So if people out there wanted to try to get back to wearing some sort of minimal type shoe, either for running or just for everyday activity, is there some sort of process that they should use? I assume it's not something that you should just start doing it right away,
well,
especially if you're a runner.
Yeah, so runners will get injured all the time. And in fact, people sometimes think that, oh, you know, there's always these fads in running. And one, you know, one worry I have is that that people are going to be faddish about this. I mean, obviously, barefoot running is not a fad.
Right.
From an evolutionary perspective, it's the other way around, right? Modern shoes are a fad. People have been running barefoot for millions of years. So it's not a fad. But if you've been wearing shoes your whole life and you're a heel striker and you want to suddenly become a 4-foot striker, and you want to transition, you have to be very careful and gentle because the reason a lot of people like heel striking is that it's actually very easy on your calf muscles. You don't have to have strong calf muscles, and you can have weak feet. Most people have really astonishingly weak feet. So if you want to transition, several suggestions. One is whatever you do, go really slowly and carefully because you have to build up strength in the calf muscles. You have to build up strength in your foot muscles. You have to build up strength in your Achilles, and if you do too quickly, I guarantee that, you know, anybody who does that will get Achilles tendonitis and calf spasms, and they'll just be unhappy and wish they'd never tried it.
Right.
So a gradual, slow, thoughtful, careful transition is incredibly important. Secondly, I really think that although it's fine to wear minimal shoes if you want to, it's very useful actually to try running barefoot. It's interesting how people are very scared of it, but you shouldn't be because you know, what thing people are most scared of is the fact that the pavement is hard, right? Asphalt,
right.
Concrete,
yep.
Is hard. But the physics of barefoot running or minimal shoe running, or even wearing a normal running shoe, as long if you 4-foot strike, there is no collision. You don't need any cushioning in a shoe when there's no collisional force. We can't measure that collision. It doesn't even appear on a force plate, right? So the only thing you need that shoe for is to protect your foot from abrasion. So you don't need all that stuff on your shoe if you're a 4-foot striker. You don't,
right.
All you need is something just to kind of prevent you from the friction that comes from abrasion. And it turns out that what most barefoot runners care about is not how hard the surface is, it's how rough the surface is. So the best surfaces are actually an old, smooth, paved road that's smooth and hard. It feels terrific. So I recommend that everybody who wants to try this, go run on a paved road. Go for just like a quarter of a mile. Don't go any more than that. The first 10, 20 steps will feel kind of weird. You'll feel that you're moving more towards the ball of your foot.
Yeah.
And it should feel like very natural and free, like a kind of a plane coming in for a landing. You don't want to land too high. A lot of people also land too high on the ball of their foot, with a very like a ballerina, like a very pointed foot. That puts a lot of stress on the foot, too. You want to come in at a very low angle, and your heel should just come down naturally and just sort of touch. And if you want to see videos of experts doing it, go to our website, www.barefootrunning.fas.harvard.edu, and a video is worth 1,000 words in this case, and just shows what good runners do. They come at a very low angle, and it's very natural, it's very graceful. And then finally, you know, build up very slowly, and take your time.
From my own personal experience, this summer I've experimented. Like I've had to relearn how to run, as you're saying, and I've spent a lot of time either being barefoot or wearing some sort of minimal shoe or the Vibrams or flip flops, you know, something like that. And now I find when I wear sneakers, that hurts my feet, even if I'm not running.
Yeah, a lot of people have gone barefoot or gone into minimal shoes now start disliking a lot of other shoes, because one of the things that you notice with a lot of modern footwear is that it's very stiff, that they're very stiff and they have arch supports.
Right.
So if you take a typical shoe and you kind of twist it, right, you'll realize that it's like stiff as a board often. And
right.
And if you look inside the shoe, there's not only, you know, there's a big arch support. And once your feet get stronger and the arch muscles in your arch get stronger and you get used to that flexibility, a lot of people find that stiff-soled shoes are a little bit uncomfortable, and that's very common, I'm afraid. It's funny, you know, you go to the gym, right? You see people exercising their whole bodies except for their feet, and you know your feet are loaded with muscles, and they're
right.
and just like any other muscle in your body, if you exercise them, they'll get stronger. And a lot of people spend their whole lives or most of their lives not knowing how nice it is, what a wonderful feeling it is to have strong feet. You probably figured this out, but it changes just your interaction with the ground in ways that change you all day long. I mean, I know that over the last few years, as I've done more and more of this, that just my body feels better. My posture's improved. I just feel happier more of the time because my feet are now stronger. And there's just huge dividends I think you get from having strong feet, and barefoot walking and barefoot running, or minimal shoe running and walking are just a great way to do that.
Sure. I teach a barefoot aerobics class at the gym. It's called Willpower and Grace. It was created by a woman named Stacey Lee Krause, who is a Nike elite instructor. So she's worked with Nike on the whole Nike Free.
Mm-hmm.
And so she just designed a class with the premise that you just talked about, which is we've got all these muscles in our feet, and we put sneakers on, and then we work out, we go to the gym, and then we're not doing anything for our feet, and we're harming our bodies. And so this class is barefoot. And it's based on using your feet, learning how to leave the floor, but also how to land, and supporting
mm-hmm.
all of your joints and things like that. So something also that I would recommend for people who are starting to run barefoot, and a good way to strengthen your feet would be taking that class. So
sounds great. I mean, people need help with their feet. There's no question about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, a quarter of Americans get flat feet. A quarter.
Wow.
And of course, that didn't used to be the case at all a few generations ago. And I attribute that, of course, to weak feet from footwear, often particularly because kids are thrown into shoes that allow their feet to get weak. And of course, the way we treat flat feet now is typically to put orthotics in.
Right.
And orthotics, basically, they do make your feet feel happier because they do stabilize the arch. In a sense, it's a positive feedback loop because it takes the muscles out even more from their job of strengthening the arch. And so they get weaker and weaker, and so you get more and more
dependent,
more reliant
almost,
on the orthotic. And you know, the alternative is rarely explored, right, which is to take the orthotic off, take the shoe off, and just strengthen the foot. And it's anathema to a lot of some podiatrists, not all, of course, but you know, we need to take our feet back, I think, from forces that would confine them and weaken them.
Well, that sounds like a great plan to me. Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour, and also thank you for doing the work that you do.
Take care.
Everybody get on your feet. You make me nervous when you're in your seat. Take off your shoes. Doing a dance that can't be beat. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'.
That was Dr. Daniel Lieberman from Harvard University, If you'd like more information about the biomechanics of different foot strikes in endurance running, and also the applications to human endurance running prior to the modern running shoe, you should feel free to visit their website, which is barefootrunning.fas.harvard.edu. Also, if you're interested in learning more about that barefoot functional fitness class that I talked about, Willpower and Grace, you can visit the website at willpowermethod.com. That's willpowermethod.com. I'll be posting all of the links for this month's episode on our show notes page at humanistpodcast.org. Up next is Dr. Daniel Howell, who is an associate professor of biology at Liberty University, as well as author of The Barefoot Book. Prior to joining the faculty of Liberty University, Daniel performed biomedical research at both Duke University Medical Center in North Carolina and McGill University in Montreal. In the past few years, he's done considerable research on shoes and foot biomechanics and discovered that shoes are more than just uncomfortable. They are literally harmful to our bodies. In fact, according to Dr. Howell, virtually every foot ailment in Western society can be traced back to the shoe. In his new book, The Barefoot Book, Daniel reveals the damage done to our bodies by shoes and the benefits of going without them. He also gives some tips on how to start living a more shoeless life. I spoke with Dr. Howell over Skype earlier this week. Daniel Howell, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour. I'm really excited to have you on our show. You're a biology professor for Liberty University, and you've been sort of in the press recently. I've heard you on the radio, I've seen you on the news, talking about The Barefoot Book, which is a book that you wrote about 50 great reasons to kick off your shoes. So can you just talk a little bit about the idea of the book?
Okay. Yeah, the idea behind the book is that shoes are unnatural and that they actually change the way we stand, they change the way we walk, they change the way we run. And those changes are not natural, and it turns out they're bad for us, and that we as a culture are addicted to them. We wear them way too much, and it's having a negative impact on our health.
You talk about shoes changing our feet. How do they do that anatomically? I mean, they're built in such a way that does this, right?
You know, there's an interesting Dr. William Rossi, who passed away a few years ago. One of his favorite quotes is that there's no such thing as a sensible shoe. That's one of my favorite quotes of him.
I like that.
Yeah, and basically, it's shoes, by their very nature, do change not only the shape of the foot, but they antagonize the function of the foot. They cause changes like hallux valgus and bunions because the toe box on shoes squishes your toes together.
Right.
And the elevated heel shifts the weight of your body forward. And the last, or the structure from which the shoe was built, usually has, it's got some negative features in it, like it's got a sunken out place at the ball of your foot. So the lowest part of your foot when you're standing tends to be on the ball of your foot, which is a very unnatural position. So they causing changes in the tendons, shortening the Achilles tendon, causing bone structure changes with things like bunions and hallux valgus and hammer toe, and causing soft tissue damage like atrophy of muscles, weakening of the arch, that kind of thing.
Right. And now, you mentioned that they also affect the mechanics of the foot and how we walk. So what's it supposed to look like when we walk?
Well, walking is a very complicated process. It involves almost half of the 600 muscles in your body and half of the 200 bones in your body just to take a single step. It's one of the most complicated biomechanical feats that we do on a daily basis. And normally when you walk, and walking and running, by the way, is very different. And shoes affect the way we walk and run differently. When it comes to walking, shoes, because of the elevated heel, tend to make us too much of a heel walker. We land with too much of an angle on our heels. And the shoe converts the step into a rolling motion because your foot can't go through the natural motions of grasping the ground, flexing at the toes, or extending at the toes and grasping the ground and doing these kind of motions. A shoe converts your step into a roll.
Right.
And the biggest example of this is there's a couple of shoes that actually can, the bottom of the shoe is virtually spherical. It's a circle.
Right.
And you just roll on top of this. But all shoes essentially do that because most shoes have an elevated heel and a toe spring. And shoes have arch supports, which don't allow the arches to function as shock absorbers and springs and ends up putting more impact on your joints from your feet all the way up your spine.
Right. I'd like them to change the name. Arch support. It's misleading, in my opinion.
It definitely is. It's arch damaging is what it is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, some people say that that sneakers and how they affect the mechanics of both our walk and our run, as you said, the stride, it's a public health issue, but you've also talked about it as sort of like a social issue because there's some stigma around it.
It is kind of a social health issue. And I know like Christopher McDougall, for example, who wrote Born to Run, is on a campaign to get people out of their shoes almost as much as I am. Because of the health issue. In fact, with high heels are so damaging. I would like to see warning labels on high heels. I'm serious. They do so much damage to your knees and to your arches and to the bones of your feet that consumers ought to be aware that these shoes are damaging them. When it comes to walking around barefoot, the social hurdles are a lot bigger than the physical hurdles. It's not too hard to adjust to walking around barefoot, even if you've worn shoes for decades. All you have to do is take off your shoes and start walking. Now, there's a right way to do that and a wrong way to do that. And if you just take off your shoes and expect your foot to perform to its full capacity, it won't.
Right.
And if you overdo it, you can hurt yourself. So I actually give some tips in the barefoot book about how to safely start increasing your barefoot time. But the physical hurdles are not that bad. The social ones are a lot bigger. And we as a society have just become so addicted to our footwear, and we are so convinced, almost brainwashed, that shoes are an absolute modern necessity and that it's yucky to be without them. It's hazardous, it's dangerous, it's unhealthy, it's unhygienic. All of these things, which are actually 180 degrees wrong.
Right.
But it makes it very hard to go out in public barefoot. I'm encouraged because more and more people are doing it and they're spurred on by the barefoot running movement. It's not as awkward to go out in public and run barefoot. You'll get some attention, but that attention is almost always positive. But because so much attention has been brought to barefoot running in the last year or two, people have been, the American mind is beginning to open up to the idea that shoes are dangerous or that they're not as good as going barefoot. And so people are considering barefoot more. And I think that's a great thing.
Absolutely. And so if listeners out there are considering going barefoot, can you give them some tips on how to transition? You mentioned that there are some in your book.
Yeah, first places I would start is at home because it's easy to do that without so much of the social stigma. You can just go barefoot more often in your home probably. When you come home from work, don't trade your house shoes for, I mean, your work shoes for some house shoes. Just go barefoot.
Right.
Do your yard work barefoot. Take your dog for a walk barefoot or just walk around your neighborhood for exercise barefoot. Make your house a shoe-free zone and just try to spend as much time barefoot as possible in your house. And also, you know, at casual events, non-formal events, neighborhood barbecues, anything like that where it's kind of low-key and casual, going barefoot probably isn't going to raise a lot of eyebrows
right.
in those situations, and you can get a little bit more barefoot time.
Can you talk a little bit about what got you involved in doing this just personally?
Well, a couple of three things. Let me mention three things. Number one, I did begin running again. I had quit running for a number of years and began to start running again about 5 years ago and was experiencing lots of running injuries that were easy to trace to the shoe because I was doing trail running and my injuries most of them were related to twisting an ankle or rolling my ankle from stepping on a rock or a root. And the shoe sole, which is so hard and inflexible, it twists and your ankle takes the brunt of that. And I was getting fed up with those injuries. So I read about some barefoot running on the internet. And a few years ago, it was really a new thing. There was only two people, Barefoot Rick Reber and Barefoot Ken Bob, that had a web presence. But they were talking about barefoot running. I tried it. I loved it. I've never gone back. I've been running for 2,000 miles for over 3 years and had no injuries whatsoever so far. So I'm
yes.
keeping my fingers crossed. Also, at the same time, I was 8 years ago, I took this job at Liberty. And at that time, Liberty had a fairly strict dress code that required ties, shoes, socks, that kind of thing. At that time, I realized it was the first time in my life that I had worked a job. Now, all of the jobs up to that point, I was working in a lab. I had a lab coat on, blue jeans and a t-shirt, and flip-flops were basically my staple clothing.
Right.
It's the first time I was required to wear shoes and socks for 50, 60 hours a week. And I discovered that I have something that I call hot foot syndrome. My feet get so hot inside of a closed-toe shoe and socks for hours a day that I have trouble just thermoregulating my body. I can't stand it. I get so hot, I feel like I'm going to pass out. And I would, there would be days I would come in my office and sneak off my shoes and socks and just stand on the cold tile floor,
right,
cool off, and then go back to work. And since I have come out of the closet with that issue, you know, so to speak, and talked about that in the book, one of the things that I've noticed is that there's lots of people with it. Lots of people are coming to me and saying, "Yeah, I experienced that too. I have the same thing." So I think it's fairly common.
Right.
And then third, what really got the book started was I was doing a lot of barefoot running. I was beginning to spend more time barefoot because just my love of barefoot running kind of bled into other areas of my life. I started barefoot hiking, just spending a lot of time barefoot. Eventually, when the dress code relaxed, I was teaching barefoot, and the students were asking me questions. Students were constantly asking me, "Why do you not like shoes? Why do you run barefoot? Why do you hike barefoot? Why do you spend so much time barefoot?" And I didn't want to give them the simple answer that, well, I just like it better. I wanted to give them a better answer than that. I thought that there was probably a better answer to it. And so I just went into the scientific literature. I did as much digging as I could find and found out that there's actually a lot of good reasons to not like shoes, that there's a conflict, a basic conflict between the human foot and the shoe.
Right.
And it evolved into a book. Just answering their questions kind of led to the book.
Well, that's great. I'm certainly thankful that you wrote the book. It's certainly changed my life.
Well, good. Thanks.
My last question. So this is the Humanist Hour. So we're a news show that covers topics that are in the news with a humanist perspective. So just the idea, it's secular, it's grounded in reason and science.
Sure.
And things like that. So part of the barefoot running sort of the idea is that it's grounded in evolution.
I haven't studied it. Honestly, I haven't looked at it from a historical perspective or an evolutionary perspective. I have compared the human foot to the foot of other animals and other primates in particular, and there's nothing like it. The human foot is absolutely unique. The closest thing to it is probably a gorilla, and the bone structure in the gorilla is quite different. They don't have the arch structure that we have. They don't have they don't have the bony arch structure. Neither do they have the soft tissue arch structure that we have to create that windlass mechanism that we have for the arch support springs and that kind of thing. So the best I've done is just comparative anatomy with some other primates, some other animals. I haven't really looked at this from the evolutionary or the development of the foot perspective.
You work for Liberty University, which is a Christian university. And so I was just wondering, yeah, if they were able to support you with this work, if they have read about how there's some element at least of evolution. Do they still support, you know, the book that you write? And
oh yeah. The university supports me quite a bit. And you know, from the university's perspective, it's a worldview issue.
Sure.
More than anything else. So I don't think they would have any, they don't have any conflicts with what I'm doing, so I'm fine with that.
Oh,
and they're fine with that. Yeah.
Good. That's good. Well, Daniel Howell, thank you for speaking with the Humanist Hour.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Daniel Howell, author of The Barefoot Book, talking about his 2010 release, The Barefoot Book. You can get more information. You can purchase the book and also book Dr. Howell to come and speak at your school or your organization from his website, thebarefootbook.com. The last clip that I'll play for this month's episode is from another author contributing to this barefoot movement, and his name is Christopher McDougall. You might recognize his name from, I believe, both Dr. Lieberman and Dr. Howell mentioned Christopher McDougall's book. It's a national bestseller. It's called Born to Run, and it's what made the barefoot movement become really popular in the last year. So in his book, McDougall sets off to find a tribe of the world's greatest distance runners, and he learned their secrets, and in the process, shows us that everything we thought we knew about running is actually wrong. So while I didn't actually interview Christopher McDougall, I will play a clip from a New York Times roving runner, and it's a video blog, and he caught up with Chris McDougall during a run through New York City's Central Park.
This is really not a fight about barefoot versus shoes. It's not about what you wear on your feet. It's about what you're doing with your feet.
Running barefoot on pavement in Central Park. I love it.
I'm Brian Fittleman, the roving runner blogger for the New York Times. I was lucky enough to talk with and run with Chris McDougall, author of the best-selling book Born to Run.
After getting hurt so many times and having sports medicine doctors tell me I was going to have to replace my knees and replace my hips and have to have orthotics, I discovered the Tarahumara Indians of Mexico's Copper Canyons. And the Tarahumara can somehow run hundreds of miles at a time in thin homemade sandals without ever getting hurt and running deep into old age. So I went down to the Copper Canyons to find out what it is that Tarahumara are doing that we're not. And once I figured it out, that was it. That was my last running injury. Worry about where your legs and your head are, your posture.
Chris said to run upright with quick, light landings. Head over your shoulder, over your hips, over your knees, compressing like a pogo stick. But as my naked feet hit the pavement, my running form changed. I started doing all those things naturally.
So tell me, unbiased opinion.
Does not hurt. Feels pretty good.
Like nothing. And this is not... There's a lot smoother stuff out here than this. This is kind of old, gritty stuff. But not bad at all.
What about rocks and roots and glass and things like that?
I got this special equipment I like to use. They're called eyeballs. So I see a rock, I just step next to it. There's a lot less out there than you think. And another major misconception, people will always say, well, maybe the human foot is designed for soft, natural surfaces, but not for hard, man-made surfaces. Any barefoot runner will tell you, no, it's the other way around. The hard man-made surfaces are like cream. It's smooth, it's predictable, it's contoured. It's nature that you gotta watch out for.
What's the longest run you've done so far with completely barefoot?
I think about 15 or 18 miles. Yeah, out in Amish farm country in August too, so.
Wow. The notion of running barefoot turns conventional wisdom on its head. This idea of going without any shoes at all seems almost absurd when you first hear it.
Conventional wisdom is what humans have been doing for 2 million years. And the running shoe is a snap of the fingers. You know, it has basically the lifespan of the iPod. It just appeared 30 years ago. There was a study done in 1989 by the University of Oregon, one of the top biomechanical research facilities in the world. And that study proved that the greater the cushioning in the shoe, the greater the impact shock on the legs. Not less, more. That was 1989. Okay, that's more than 20 years ago. And what has been done? The shoe's gotten thicker and thicker. You got this raised heel, this supported arch, this squishy sole. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's literally like running in a pair of women's high heels. It's so sad what's happened with running. We've turned it into this self-conscious work ethic. Once you feel like you're moving with no effort, you know, you're just bouncing up and down, then you're about ready to go. And then all you want to do is just go. The one cool thing about running in bare feet is that it's a great regulator. You can't overpronate, you can't overtrain, you can't overstride. If you're in the middle of a long run and your feet start to hurt, you're done for the day.
I mean, does your feet feel like lighter and quicker?
Yeah, I think so.
I was expecting to try a tiny stretch barefoot just to see what it feels like to ease into it. But as Chris and I chatted as we ran around Central Park's asphalt path, we kept going and going and going. I was enjoying the reaction from the other runners. I asked Chris questions about his book. Next thing you know, we had run a full 6-mile loop, barefoot, on the pavement. Now, I would recommend running shorter distances at first because the tops of my feet were a little sore the next day. But the skin on the bottom of my feet? No glass, no blisters, no problem.
200-year-old farmhouse, it turned out. Doesn't it feel like, again, like you shouldn't be doing this? Like this is something forbidden you're getting away with?
Right.
That was a video blog from the New York Times with Chris McDougall, author of the national bestseller Born to Run. You can learn more about Chris McDougall and his book at chrismcdougall.com. That's chrismcdougall.com. Don't forget you can find all the links to this month's episode as well as listen to our previous episodes from our podcast page, which is humanistpodcast.org. If you have any questions or comments about barefoot running, or if you have an opinion on running barefoot versus running with shoes, we'd love to hear it. So please feel free to send us an email at hnn@americanhumanist.org. Thanks for listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
Everybody take off your shoes.